lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
Smith's report was released less than a week before Donald Trump's inauguration. On his social media platform, the president-elect says the voters have spoken. He is innocent. And Jack Smith is a lame-brain prosecutor who was unable to get his case tried before the election. Ed Donahue, Washington.
I'm Scott Baba for Pacifica Radio.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielogo, and as always, thank you so much for your listenership, for your donorship, for your support to this wonderful radio station, WPFW, that allows us to bring a breadth of topics to you and music that you don't get anywhere else. So once again, thank you all so much. This is our second year, at least it's the second show of the year for me. And for the past couple of shows, I know I've been talking a lot about the eviction issue here in the District of Columbia. And that is a very serious issue. And we've been talking a lot of data and policy. But today I really wanted to center the voice of tenants in the District of Columbia, more specifically renters in the District of Columbia who are faced with some very serious issues, right? I think the central issue being that the rent is just too high. Salaries aren't keeping up and, you know, everything else is expensive. So many, many folks are experiencing arrearages. They are back behind on their rent, and unfortunately having to face the possibility of eviction. We have not seen, at least in our opinion, anybody in the city government step up to say, we are going to fix this. In fact, what we've seen is some changes to one of the only programs that helps folks stay housed, and that's the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, which has been changed under emergency law. It actually makes it more difficult for folks to avail themselves of those supports to help keep them housed. And we've talked about that in the past, and we will provide updates as the council works to pass permanent legislation on that. So we'll make sure to keep you aware of that as it happens. But as I mentioned today, I really wanted to focus on lifting up tenant voice. What we have not heard in this whole discussion around what's happening in the district and its housing stock is the really what we've not heard, the voice of tenants and their the impact that all of this is having on them, right? Why folks aren't able to pay the rent, what experiences are they having as a result of feeling this pressure of, you know, not only having being behind on their rent, but very possibly being experiencing homelessness. That is a real fact. Many folks may not have a place to go, or they'll couch surf, or, you know, they'll go to shelter. But it is very, very serious. And as of yet, we've not really seen a response from the city leadership saying, this is a real problem, and we need to make sure that our district residents are protected and are not having to live in these precarious means by not knowing where they may be, you know, the next month or the next day for that matter. What we do want to let folks know is that there are many tenant protections in place for district renters. A landlord simply can't evict you just by telling you that he doesn't want you there anymore. There is a legal process that has to be followed. Of course, that can also be very precarious and challenging for many folks, especially if you don't have legal representation, but we'll get into some potential supports for that a little later in the show. But once again, really want to center the voice of tenants and make sure that their voice is heard in this whole discussion around the unaffordability that exists in the housing when it relates to housing. This past month, Empower DC, or excuse me, this past year, the Empower DC held a tenant talk back where we invited district residents, renters, to come out to an event we held to really just hear from them. What are the issues that are affecting you? What are you experiencing? How will having ERAP both, you know, change policy-wise, but also be tremendously slashed in the budget? There is, as compared to previous years, there is very little funding for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. Most of the providers have run out or are running out of money, and they are no longer accepting applications. Actually, they closed the application portal the same day that it opened this past year. So, you know, there are a lot of issues that are affecting folks, and we wanted to make sure, once again, that those voices were heard and that those stories were out there so we can have a better understanding of what this effect, you know, how this is affecting many, many district residents. And the numbers keep going up. This past show, I shared with you the numbers. The eviction numbers keep going up, both the filing of evictions and executed evictions. So it is a serious issue that we are experiencing here in the District of Columbia. And we simply can't evict our way out of this housing crisis that exists. So I want to share with you a couple of videos, both from district renters, and we'll also hear some videos from public housing residents. If we're able to, we'll take some phone calls a little later if any folks want to share their experiences on what is, you know, what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. So let me go ahead and start by sharing this video. This is a recap video of the event that we had, and then we'll hear some specific testimony, if you will, from affected residents.
There has been a lot of work on behalf of landlords and our city's decision makers, such as the council, to roll back many of the tenant protections that we have seen, especially after the pandemic. They're doing this by perpetuating narratives that most of the things that we're seeing with DC's affordable housing crisis are the tenants' faults. So things like unpaid rent are what's causing an affordable housing crisis. And we want to counter that narrative and also show the real human experiences that are happening that are causing people to fall behind.
So this program prevents folks from becoming homeless and it helps people to find homes, right? It's kind of a last stop measure. The funds for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program were drastically cut. You can see what they were in the last fiscal year. Really, starting now, the program only has 27
million. I thought I'd be homeless. I always worked hard. I didn't come from a family of homelessness, but government system failure brought me here. The economic collapse of 2009, I lost my small business. I lost my home. Before you make a derogatory characterization of people that are in situations like mine, maybe you should then go back and do the work and make sure that the program did what it was supposed to do before you say that people are sitting on a system. People are just looking for handouts, because that is not my situation. And I take offense to those that say that.
I've been on the DC housing voucher list since maybe the early 2000s, and we're in 2024. I left my son's father when he was two. I'm a domestic violence survivor, and I. It's going to puberty. He should be able to have a room. He should be able to have a bed. He sleeps on the sofa. I should be able to have a bed. I sleep on an air mattress, but that's my reality, and I'm grateful. But at the end of the day, where do we change it? Because there's people who's actually doing the right thing. How can we meet them in the middle?
Fixing this system would start with just having an understanding of the people in this city. I mean, we're your constituents, where we hired you to do a job. Not you, we don't work for you, you work for us. So it's time for you to step up, make the city a better place. You want all this extra stuff for the city, then start with the citizens that are gonna help maintain the city, live in the city, keep the city running and going.
You made a promise to the residents of DC that you will build affordable housing for low-income people. She needs to honor that promise, because every builder that I've seen come up, they asking for market rent, and that's not fair.
It's not only about collecting stories and getting that shared understanding, it's also about honoring the expertise of those most impacted by injustice.
That was, as I mentioned, a summary of the event, and we heard a couple of voices. We're about to hear some more specific voices, but just to underscore what we heard in that short video, you know, folks trying, right? Folks are trying to figure out how to make it work, but there is so much stacked against them. And folks feeling like those people in power, those folks that get voted in, are not representing them, are not doing their job and working for them and providing those much needed supports, especially for low income district residents. So let's get into, I'm going to play several videos now they're videos on my end, it's audio on your end, of several folks that attended this meeting. And let me say once again that, you know, this was a cold November afternoon that we held this meeting, and folks really wanted to come out and be proactive about raising up these issues and sharing their stories, because they really are in a struggle for survival. So let's go ahead and we'll hear a couple of stories here.
I'm Nathan Hunter Ill. I was born in Washington, D.C. I used to live in Benning Courts, now I live in Capitol Vista Apartments. D.C. born and bred, been here 55 years. So it had us scrunching around trying to get money from friends and family to make sure the rent got paid. But they want the rent paid, but they don't want to make repairs. Like, it's mold in the bathroom, everything. We done asked them to come fix it. They don't do nothing. They had a light that wasn't really working. They wouldn't come fix it. It was stressing my wife to the point that I'm like, I worked hard to get three jobs so we can actually move. So that's why now we moved out of Benning Courts, and we're in a much better, cleaner environment. The one thing I would say to Mayor Bowser, you made a promise to the residents of DC that you will build, that there will be more built affordable housing for low-income people. She need to keep her promise, because it's unfair that people are trying to move. It's bad enough that the housing situation, where they still backlog with doing vouchers. She needs to honor that promise, because every builder that I've seen come up, they asking for market rent, and that's not fair.
That was Mr. Nathan, and, you know, longtime district resident, 55 years, as he mentioned. And he talks about a couple of things that we need to make sure we're listening to, is these promises that elected leaders make to district residents, right? Well, we're going to build more affordable housing. The main question we always ask is affordable to who? And then I think that's a general theme that we heard, right? Once again, is that there really is no affordable housing. Folks can't afford the housing they are in. And when they go look for other housing, it's just as difficult. Some great points that Mr. Nathan lifts up there. Let's go to the next audio clip.
So my name is Melvin Perkins, and I live in Ward 6, and it's called the NoMa area. And I moved there, having left the Pet Handy Shelter for Women. My case manager exited me out of the Rapid Rehousing Program. I had no idea that I could have asked for an extension. I had no idea she didn't have to do that because she knew I didn't have permanent stabilization housing, which I now understand the program is mandated, supposedly, to do. Until I now know what ERAP is. And it has been an ongoing, agonizing situation. I've exhausted my retirement. I've exhausted my savings. I've been looking for help, trying to get help. I've been trying to find a job. I've gone to all of these job fairs that the DC government has sponsored. I never thought I'd be homeless. I always worked hard. I didn't come from a family of homelessness. Government system failure brought me here. The economic collapse of 2009, I lost my small business. I lost my home. I've done my part. I paid my bills on time. I've never paid late. Something's happened here, and your program is what happened here. Before you make a derogatory characterization of people that are in situations like mine, maybe you should then go back and do the work and make sure that the program did what it was supposed to do before you say that people are sitting on a system. People are just looking for handouts, because that is not my situation, and I take offense to those that say that.
A great point that Ms. Melvin brings up there is this mischaracterization of many district residents as, you know, waiting for somebody to bail them out, waiting, somebody else is going to pay the rent for me. And that's the narrative that's been put forth, especially in the discussion around the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, is that many people are gaming the system, that people are willingly not paying their rent because, you know, the government will take care of it or somebody else will take care of it. When it comes down, need help. And, you know, this goes back to just some old fashioned values, right? Is this a value of the District of Columbia and its city leadership? Do we value helping people in need? And from the testimony we've heard so far, it doesn't appear so, right? At least these folks feel like they are not being helped in their time of need. We are in a system that, you know, many are left out of, many do not get to enjoy from, and you know, it is coming to a head, and folks are really sharing, like Ms. Melvin, how, you know, she's at a point where she needs help. She's been trying to find work, as she mentioned. She's exhausted all of her means of income and ways to support herself, and she is at a point where she really needs help, and she's being failed. And that is, to me, one of the saddest things to hear, is how many folks feel like they are being failed, like nothing is being done, and they don't really see a way out of, you know, this heaviness that weighs down on them. We'll continue to hear some more stories here.
My name is Jessica Braddock. I'm a native Washingtonian. I lived in the Petworth community 12 and a half years. So I currently live with my mom and my son. And we're just trying to survive how we survive. I was wrongfully evicted in 2023. I did Stay DC. I did ERAP. And on top of that, we were going through COVID. I was doing like 60% of my salary, so I wasn't getting my full salary. And on top of that, I was still paying rent. Didn't get any help. They put me in a program that I had to find my own apartment. That didn't work. Here I am, still house to house, bouncing around, living with people, paying them rent. I've been a native my whole life. I've been working since I was 14. Thank you, Murray and Barry, for your summer youth. Like, I've been putting into the system. Where's the help? Because everybody's gonna have a day where you fall short. And yes, we had a nest egg, and yes, that's what we were getting through until we found this place. But not everybody had that. I've been on the DC housing voucher list since maybe the early 2000s, and we're in 2024. I left my son's father when he was two. I'm a domestic violence survivor, and I've worked 2 and 3 jobs to maintain, and I still can't afford rent. We live in a 1-bedroom apartment. My son is 12 and a half. He's going into puberty. He should be able to have a room. He should be able to have a bed. He sleeps on the sofa. I should be able to have a bed. I sleep on an air mattress, but that's my reality, and I'm grateful. But at the end of the day, where do we change it? Because there's people who's actually doing the right thing. How can we meet them in the middle?
Once again, Miss Jessica, you know, underscores this theme of people needing help. There comes a time when everybody's going to need some help in our lives, and I think very few of us would disagree with that. And, you know, she once again points out this other theme that we heard over and over on that day, and I'm sure we'll continue to hear, is the fact that we are trying. We are trying our hardest. We are using all of our resources that we've saved up to simply survive, subsist in this system. She's got her son sleeping on a couch. She's sleeping on an air mattress. And to a large extent, she is very grateful because they're not on the street. But, you know, is this the society that we want? Is this the reality that we want for many longtime Native district residents, Native Washingtonians who are having to live like this? And, you know, and not even to mention the psychological effect that this has on parents like Miss Jessica, but on our young people who are having to grow up in these type of situations. I think that's something really important for us to note, is that we have, you know, a generation coming up that you know, is having to simply survive. So we want to make sure that we're able to be a city that prioritizes people who need help, and we are able to put our vast amount of resources — this is a very rich city — and to really help its people out. Let's continue here. We're going to listen from the next to the next video.
My name is Jacqueline Cozart, and I'm from Benny Courts. I had 3 sisters and 1 brother. I'm the baby. I live with my husband. Something special about where I live right now is they like family around here. They help you out. They talk to me, they come visit me. We go places together, community. In the community, we right there together. I was behind 1 month rent. And I got into this program called Delighted. And when I got a case manager from there, the housing lady signed me up for ERAP. It didn't take long. She put me down for 7 months. They paid my rent for 7 months. So within them 7 months, I saved money. If I wouldn't have had that 7 months, I would have been, had no money but paying rent. I would have just paid rent. And that's it. I would have been struggling. How I'm gonna get food? How I'm gonna get clothes? I would tell the mayor and whoever, please don't give up ERAP. We need that program.
That's right, Miss Jackie telling the mayor, you know, to fund ERAP and to not get rid of it. Although they haven't gotten rid of it, what they have done essentially is made it very difficult for folks to be able to use it. And what I find really important about Miss Jackie's story is the fact that this program gave her a little time and space, right? Because folks are making it however they can make it month to month, right? Just paying the rent and making sure, you know, struggling, stretching every dollar that they have to be able to just make it to that next month. But when there are programs that give folks some support that allow them to, you know, build some savings, to build that little nest egg, that we all need in case of emergencies. That's a really the other important factor in this in the issues that we're talking about, because folks are really, really struggling, and they need that help. They need that little break to say, hey, let me put some money together so I can cover all of the things that I need to cover, as she mentioned, you know, housing, clothes. If you got kids, you know how expensive that can be in and of itself. So some very wise words there from Miss Jackie. Let's go to the next video.
My name is Ebony Price, and I am from Washington, D.C. I'm from Ward 8, and I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. I moved around a lot in Washington, D.C. I live with my three daughters. Their ages are 18, 9, and 6 years old. Well, I moved to where I stay at now since 2015. I've been there, and the conditions of the housing is terrible, is not up to par, and they have excuses as to why they won't do it, or they say they have completed things or done things, but in reality it's not. So many failed inspections, because we matter. We are people too. We are humans, and people get to go home, like landlords and property managers and maintenance people get to go home to their best, because they can able to do it whenever they want to. If they have any issues, they can call a professional or do anything like that. It's like, treat us tenants how you would like to be treated, or how your family members would be treated.
Ms. Ebony brings up a very salient point, the issue of just poor living conditions, right? This is the other thing that we hear quite a bit from district renters is, you know, landlords not living up to their end of the contract. When you lease up somewhere, you sign a contract and you say, I'm going to pay you this amount of money for this unit. And your responsibility, landlord, is to maintain it. My responsibility is to pay you the rent. And what we see in many cases is just errant landlords who are not taking care of the properties, which result in people having to live in some very unsafe and unhealthy conditions. You know, we hear of black mold, we hear of holes in ceilings, we hear of water leaks, rodent infestation, insect infestations. And for many, and you know, this is not a value judgment, but for many, what we hear is, you know, that is part of what informs not paying the rent. It's because, you know, why would you pay for something that you are not getting the real value out of? I think that's very important for district residents to know, especially district residents who have been called to court. It is important to raise up, you know, for eviction, especially for non-payment of rent. If you are experiencing housing conditions, housing infractions, housing code infractions, it is very important to let the judge know what is happening in your unit, and the fact that the landlord is not, you know, keeping up to their end of the contract, because, you know, for many, many district residents, what we see are very unsafe and unhealthy conditions. And that's once again, another factor why some folks make that decision to not pay the rent, is because why would you pay for something that you're not seeing any benefit from? Let's continue. We've got about two more stories here to listen to from this group of folks from this event.
My name is Dorhan Francis. I currently live in Ward 7. I really love the city. I've been here since I was a kid, really small, grew up, went to Anacostia High School, graduated from Anna. It'll be myself, my wife, and our three children. A few years has been kind of rough trying to hold down housing, and they just recently denied it. Just before, they mentioned that it was supposed to reopen in October. Now it's later on, from what I was told. This is affecting my young ones' in different ways. I would love for their concern to be focused on school, make it through school, but also they're thinking about, are we still gonna have a roof over our head at the end of the day when we come home from school? Is our stuff gonna be outside? Is my mom and dad gonna be okay with that? And now in those matters, fixing the system would start with just having an understanding of the people in this city. I mean, we're your constituents, where we hired you to do a job. Not you, we don't work for you, you work for us. So it's time for you to step up, make the city a better place. You want all this extra stuff for the city, then start with the citizens that are gonna help maintain the city, live in the city, keep the city running and going.
It is so sad to hear, and infuriating for that matter, what Mr. Dorhan relates here with his children, you know, feeling like, you know, they could be evicted at any point. It's so difficult to be a young person in general, right? You're figuring life out, you're figuring your way, your place in the world, but having this constant pressure of feeling like, hey, my stuff is going to end out on the street, I could be evicted, what's going to happen to me, my family, is just terrible. And once again, another major theme that we've heard from several of these folks who were kind enough to share their stories is the instability that many have and that our young people are feeling. And, you know, once again, no support out there. So very, very, you know, serious issues that we need some real solutions to. We don't need to make it more difficult for folks to remain housed. We need to figure out how we are, as a city, are going to prioritize, you know, keeping folks housed, making sure that our young people aren't feeling that any day they could end up on the street. Let's go to the last story here from this event.
Skylar Dean, a DC native right off of Georgia Randolph. In regards to tenancy, I was told that I could not reapply for ERAP by the management. ERAP told me that that was incorrect, that as long as it was in the budget, that you could not be denied. And the leasing office denied me anyway. So it just, you know, caused a lot of frustration. And now I'm displaced and looking for housing. What is broken within the system that needs to be replaced and fixed is communication.
As Skylar brings up, you know, another great point is, you know, folks need to know what is happening and need to be able to communicate, you know, better with their landlords, better with city government agencies that provide these resources, because some folks don't know about it, or there, you know, there just is no communication. So at the end of the day, you know, tenants, renters end up losing their housing and their, you know, their peace of mind, because they simply, you know, couldn't make an agreement with a landlord, didn't know of the public benefits that are out there that could have helped them. So once again, we are sharing these videos to make sure that we are interjecting tenant voice and really dispelling the myths that people don't want to pay their rent, that people are just waiting for somebody else to help them or to give them a handout, just because, you know, they simply don't want to try. And what we've heard here from just about everybody here in these videos, I think one person mentioned that they have been in the district since a very early age, but mostly everybody else identified as a native Washingtonian, as somebody who has grown up in this great city of Washington, D.C., but they are at a point in their life that they need help, and they are feeling like they are not getting that help. They are feeling untethered. They feel like nobody is out there to help them. And, you know, there are some very dark days ahead of them if they can't get any help. So we will continue sharing these stories in an effort once again to center tenant voice and experience, to dispel myths and to change this narrative that people don't want to pay their rents, when the reality is that the rents are just very, very expensive. They're the salaries, the job opportunities aren't keeping up with those exorbitant rents, and people need help. That it's simply that is the simple truth is that people need help, and the value set of this city needs to change to realize that reality, that there are many people that need help, and we need to step up and help people find some peace. With that, I want to take a little musical break. I think, you know, when I hear tenants and just residents talk about the issues, I always think about this song, Give More Power to the People by the Shy Light. So let's take a short musical break, and we'll be right back sharing some stories of the experience of public housing residents. Here we go. That was the great Shy Lights. Some people say Chi Lights. I say Shy Lights with Give More Power to the People. A wonderful song that I thought went really well with the audio that we just heard of folks, district residents, hardworking asking for that. And obviously, we can ask, but we can also demand, and we need to put some power behind that demand. So a wonderful song to remind us to give more power to the people. As we continue here, you are tuned in to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielago. We've been listening to the voices of district tenants, renters, who are experiencing issues of poor living conditions, issues of being, you know, being behind on their rent and needing help and support in order to just make it, to avoid experiencing homelessness. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is a goal of ours. And for those folks who care about housing, affordable housing, truly affordable housing in the district, is we need to make sure, firstly, that folks aren't evicted. We need to hold on to those physical buildings and properties that house these folks. But, you know, eviction is a very, very big problem here in the District of Columbia. The numbers keep going up, and we need to make sure that folks remain housed and that we're also holding on to that housing. And one of the most important stocks of housing that we have, not only in the District of Columbia, but in this country, is public housing. Public housing was created for folks who are very low income, for folks who, have disabilities, seniors, large families, to be able to have a place to live. Folks in public housing pay 30% of their income, so that makes it just about as affordable as you can get in this capitalist system. Folks who don't have an income, are unable to work, pay very little or zero rent because they need that help, right? And it really is, for many folks, that last stop before experiencing homelessness. It is housing that we sorely need and that we've been losing all around the city and all around the country because it has become attractive to developers. What we've seen is the privatization of public housing around the country. No state has been exempt really from seeing the loss of public housing in order to redevelop it and extract as much money as possible from these properties. So we thought once again to center this tenant voice and experience to hear from directly affected people that it would be great to once again capture these voices. So we have a couple of stories to share here. Usually what we do is we'll create a summary video with that summarizes the issue with some of the voices of the folks we interview, and then we have individual profiles. So we'll hear from those folks. So let's get to these videos.
Public housing is really important for Washington, D.C. because it's a city that has lost truly affordable housing. Public housing is actually the last vestige of real affordable housing in the district. People pay 30% of their income. If you have a disability, if you're unable to work, usually most people will have a zero rent. We are working with public housing residents who are the leaders, who have the lived experience and know the solutions, to build power for them, to be able to support them in identifying the issues and building strong campaigns so they can push their demands forward.
The main problem with public housing is that there is no accountability. It has been neglected by every administration for years. It only becomes relevant when there is a sale or they're trying to revitalize. DC Housing Authority should respond just like any other landlord when there are problems and things need to be done.
I'm a single mom, so like I can't afford to live where I want to live. And public houses are supposed to be for people that have low income, that needs it, that it's hard to live in DC is expensive, and we just need help. We just need a little help. What I think is needed to improve public housing, just listen to the residents, care about them more, fix the problems that we need to be fixed, be able to have the knowledge to speak out and just know that, like, your voice being heard, it really helps.
So I just feel like they should have more programs and processes in place to help people. They should have people who want to help people. My experience working with Empower DC is awesome. So to know that there is an organization that's here to help, to hear, help advocate with us, to listen to us, to understand, to try to help us find solutions and to help us get our voices out there, I'm very, very grateful and thankful for you guys.
In order to improve public housing, you should come directly to the residents and ask them their concerns. Empower DC has gave me the tools and helped me rally up my residents and keep in communication with the residents at Berry Farm.
The trick is to put you in bondage where you have to go by their rules and they don't listen to the residents. Like I said, they need to monitor the people that they are running these sites.
All they see is dollar signs and land. What public housing residents see are communities. They see where they've grown up, where their neighbors, their families lived, where their history is. So we want to make sure that we are able to preserve that.
Once again, folks, the voices of public housing residents sharing some of the concerns that they have about, the housing that they live in. And one thing that, you know, strikes me again, and it was similar to the videos we heard earlier, was this this feeling of not being heard, of when the people who experience and feel the problems, feel the issues, are not being communicated with, are not being consulted, and are not being listened to when it comes to solutions, that's where the problems exist and lie. So, some very, very common themes that we need to make sure are being heard by decision makers and are being heard by all district residents, right? Because if we want to fix this issue, it is going to take a broad base of support of people saying, we need to do better. We need to change what we're doing here and the way that we treat our residents. Let's listen to a couple more of these stories in their entirety before we have to sign off here.
My name is Linda Brown. I live in Greenleaf Senior. I've been here 20 years or more. I live here with my adult daughter who is disabled, totally disabled. The main problem with public housing is that there is no accountability. It has been neglected by every administration for years. It only becomes relevant when there is a sale or they're trying to revitalize. That is the only time that they pay attention to residents and the property. DC Housing Authority should respond just like any other landlord when there are problems and things need to be done. The positive thing of living in public housing reminds me of when I was growing up in community. I'm based in community. I won't be here forever. And so the community with her disability, the community, I would hope and rely on them to make sure that she's included and okay. And so public housing has done that for me. It has helped me to validate community.
Very, very salient words there from Ms. Brown, who talks about sense of community, this need to know that when she is no longer here, there is a community there for her daughter. And that is very true for many public housing residents who, really value the properties that I lived on, that they live on, rather. I worked with Berry Farm residents for a very long time. And one of the things that really pleasantly surprised me was the realization of these very deep ties that the neighborhood had with one another, that people had with one another in the neighborhood, how much they depended on one another. And as these properties get demolished and as these properties get, redeveloped and recreated, we see this loss of the community ties and of rich history, like at Berry Farm. So really appreciate those words from Ms. Brown that really underscore the need to keep these properties together. Let's listen to this next video.
My name is Tavon Tate, and I've been living in public housing for about 6 years. I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. My first experience, I was living on Waller Place, and we've been through like several gun violence, several bullet holes in my kids' windows, my windows, the back windows, and it was just plexiglass. It was never changed, fixed, or anything. They just put plastic over it. So then in about June, the ceiling collapsed. It was water. They said it was just old. The ceiling just fell in, but it was like water damage. The main problem I see in public housing is maintenance issues, just answering tickets on time. There's no communication. What I think is needed to improve public housing, I believe, like, just listen to the residents, care about them more, fix the problems that we need to be fixed. I'm a single mom, so, like, I can't afford to live where I want to live. And public houses is supposed to be for people that have low income, that needs it, that it's hard to live in D.C. It's expensive, and we just need help. We just need a little help. Be able to have the knowledge to speak out and just being heard, it really helps.
I wanted to end on that video because Ms. Tate, says, using your voice really helps. And that is what we feel is very important, that tenant voice is heard and most important, listened to. That these decision makers, these folks who make the budgets, who make the laws and policies that affect all district residents, know what they're doing and what the impact of these decisions have, right? We've seen, unfortunately, a change in, the funding for many important programs, such as the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. We've seen a loss, a tremendous loss, of truly affordable housing like public housing, and we need to change course. We need to realize that we are on a course that is going to leave many, many people, it's going to push many people out, and they're going to experience homelessness or be pushed out of this city. So something different needs to be done as we rev up, as we prepare for the annual oversight hearings that the city council has and the budget hearings that the city council has. Let's listen to these stories and help them to inform us. And let's make sure that we're supporting directly impacted longtime district residents, Washingtonians, to make sure that everyone in here in this city, as the mayor likes to say, has a fair shot, right? Like that's her catchphrase, a fair shot. I don't know how accurate that is because from the voices that we've heard, just a few voices we've heard in this past hour, folks don't feel like they're getting a fair shot and folks are asking for help, which they desperately need. We will continue to share these stories and bring you updates on these issues and the ways that you, district residents and anybody else that cares to help can take action. So make sure to keep tuned to WPFW. We will catch you next Tuesday here at 1 p.m. Make sure to stay tuned. You've got the news coming up in just a couple of seconds. And then right after that, you've got capitalism, race, and democracy. Thank you all once again for tuning in. We will catch you next Tuesday. Peace, everyone.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. It has now been 1 week since the first of at least several devastating fires broke out in Los Angeles, California. Since then, more than 40,000 acres have been burned, more than 12,000 structures have been destroyed or damaged, and at least 25 people have lost their lives. Firefighters continue to face challenges in their battle against the wildfires, with powerful winds forecast over the next 24 hours that could worsen the blazes or turn any new spark into a raging inferno. A new blaze, the Auto Fire, broke out late yesterday in Ventura County, which is part of an area under the highest fire threat as winds pick up, which prompted a swift response from the local fire departments. Today, assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, is now available for people impacted by the wildfires in Los Angeles County. According to FEMA Administrator Robert Fenton Jr., those impacted can apply for help with temporary housing, transportation costs, medical bills, personal property, and even funeral costs. Despite concerted efforts to block it, Special Counsel Jack Smith's report into Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election results has been released. A court hold blocking the release expired at midnight. In the report, which is more than 130 pages long, Jack Smith and his team state in no uncertain terms that they believed Trump criminally attempted to undermine the will of the people and overturn the election results. An excerpt of the report reads, and I quote, "As set forth in the original and superseding indictments, when it became clear that Mr. Trump had lost the election and that lawful means of challenging the election results had failed, he resorted to a series of criminal efforts to retain power," end quote. Jack Smith and his team also wrote in the report that they believed they could have secured a conviction against Donald Trump for his election subversion efforts. Today, Kate, the Princess of Wales, revealed that her cancer is in remission after an emotional visit to the hospital where she received treatment last year. She wrote on social media, and I quote, "It is a relief to now be in remission, and I remain focused on recovery. As anyone who has experienced a cancer diagnosis will know, it takes time to adjust to a new normal," end quote. Princess Kate received treatment at the Royal Marsden Hospital in London, which is a world-leading state-of-the-art cancer center known for its pioneering research. She expressed gratitude to the medical team for their support in helping her and her husband, Prince William, navigate the treatment. To the D.C. area, a former D.C. government employee has pleaded guilty to extortion tied to a years-long scheme targeting low- and no-income individuals. Ruth Navarre, age 57, used her position as a D.C. Department of Human Services employee to get money from people who were applying for public assistance, including those applying for health care coverage, even though it was part of her job duties to do so free of charge. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Navarre's extortion scheme had been operating, quote, at least since 2018 and continuing through at least May 2023. The office also said that in 2022, Navarre enlisted the help of a civilian accomplice, Jessica Moya, after Navarre understood that law enforcement may have become aware of her scheme. In today's weather, it's currently about 34 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.
What do Angela Davis, Mehdi Hasan, Ibrahim X. Kendi, V, formerly Eve Ensler, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Sonia Sanchez, Amy Goodman, Medea Benjamin, Mosab Abu Toha, Congresswoman Cori Bush, Noura Erekat, Congressman Jamal Bowman, Farafina Khan, Linda Sarsour, Isra Shakir, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and WPFW have in common? Well, Busboys and Poets 2025 Peace Ball, Voices of Justice and Liberation, an event featuring live music, speeches, performances, food, and drink. Details, including a complete list of speakers and performers, as well as how you can both support WPFW and join the fun on Saturday, January.